Thanks, Jamie. Welcome to November, everyone, our second PEAT Collaborative meeting of this academic year. On behalf of the November organizing group, Kaysen O'Neill and Shannon Mulhern, we are really excited to share with you voices, kind of to tune in to today's teachers and students. As we were thinking about this topic, one of the things that we've realized is those of us who have been in higher education and work to prepare future teachers, in a lot of instances, we remain visitors to today's schools. Maybe we have developed really great partnerships with our community schools who open their doors to honor pre-student teaching clinicals or perhaps host our student teachers. We may also have really good relationships with educational professionals who service maybe children of our own or kids that we know. And as we're training future teachers, we want to make sure that we are mindful of what today's schools, who today's learners, and who today's teachers are. And so we have put together a panel of three different voices of individuals with three different perspectives. The first is the first of a PEAT Collaborative. We have an administrator who serves in the capacity of directing human resources for a community school district. And we're excited to hear Leslie's perspective on who's today's teacher is, maybe perhaps some of the challenges, affordances, and what teachers and schools that she interacts with are facing, and how the school is approaching supporting those teachers. We've got our second panelist, it's kind of a dynamic duo down from who are educators who are going to share the perspective of who their learners are, who they're interacting with, and what are some of the challenges that students today in their classrooms are dealing with. How has that affected or changed the way that they approach their planning, their delivery, interacting with learners in the spaces where they are? And then our third panelist is a researcher who has been working for lots of years tracking physical educators across their career, and has learned in a systematic way perhaps some of the factors that have kept people in the field, who've maybe pushed people out of the field, and what we can learn from this research in terms of how it might affect our practices in preparing future teachers to be successful in the fields and the communities in which they serve. So, this is kind of a listening session, but we don't want it to be a passive listening session. So please do, when questions come up, put them in the chat, and between panelists, we're going to open it up for individuals to field questions. So Leslie Albee is our first panelist. She's the Director of Human Resources in District 87, which is a Central Illinois school district. And Leslie, I'm going to turn it over to you, let you share a little bit about yourself, your role, and what you're seeing in the schools, how that can help us as teacher educators be better partners for you and for teachers that we're sending out into schools today.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I don't know that I'll take a full 10 minutes, but I want to make sure that there's some opportunity for questions as well. So a little bit about me. I went to ISU as an undergrad, got my teaching degree. I student taught and became a building administrator in Bloomington. And I left the field of education a little bit for 5 years, and then came back actually when COVID hit, because I missed the team environment and working with teachers, to be honest. So I came back as an assistant principal, and this year is my first year as director of human resources, back with District 87. So that's a little bit about me. I'm looking at the questions here about just my experience. So I'm new to HR world, but not necessarily new to education, and teachers coming from college or university level as first year teachers. And so when I think about some of the issues facing them and some of the challenges that they have, and then also what are some of the things that are going really well, I've been teaching since 2006. So, I mean, we're coming up on almost 20 years, and a lot's changed in that time. I just love seeing the excitement that they have. We were just at a job fair earlier this week and at ISU, and just, you know, the energy and the ideas and things that 17 years ago when I was first in their position, never would have thought about. And just, to be honest, the technology and the tools and the resources that they have available to them is just, it's awesome. So many of them are far ahead of what I know how to do. And not that I'm necessarily a technology expert, but I think the group of students that are finishing college now and coming into the workforce just have a real knack for technology and ways in which they can use it to connect with kids, engage families, and really just change, you know, the world of teaching and education altogether. Factors that I think are challenges. And I said this back when I started teaching. One of the things that I felt like I didn't have in my teacher preparation was that classroom management piece. And I had this probably sense of utopia that, oh, kids behave, they listen, they follow directions, they're going to be engaged. And I see my teachers giggling at this. And one of the things that I said at one time was, I think one of the things that new teachers are facing are finding their identity when they first start, their teacher identity. You leave student teaching, and I did a year-long student teaching program through ISU. So I spent a year with my cooperating teacher. And I think in that year, I saw what she did, and I tried to mimic that as I got my own classroom. And what I found was, she, over her 30 plus years of teaching, had developed that street cred, you know, that I didn't have as a new teacher. And she had a way to interact with kids that she had developed this art of it. And you don't know that as a student teacher and then going in. But so some of the things that I tried to mirror when I had my own classroom didn't necessarily work out, you know. And what's can sometimes be a challenge for those first going into education, if they're student teaching in that traditional format, I would say at least around Illinois, they are student teaching second semester. So they don't get to see what happens in August. They don't get to see what happens on the first day of school, the first week of school, the teaching of the routines and procedures and expectations and how repetitive that is over and over and over early on. Because they walk in January, February, and it's like, that's already established. So some of the challenges that I think they face are that relationship building piece sometimes, that how do you separate between you want to be friendly and cordial and compassionate, and but also still the leader of the classroom. And so how do you find that balance? And so that is one thing that I would say, I wish my teacher preparation had given more of that. I felt like I was, you know, certified to teach PE and I'm certified to teach language arts. I felt like over time I could, if there was content I didn't know, I could have figured that out. I could have gotten additional training on that. But going into my first teaching experience, that classroom management piece is the piece that I felt like for me was missing. And that When I see teachers who are leaving our district now or leaving the field of education, that respect, that behavior piece can be really challenging, and it's draining. They're tired. So to give them some tools, practical tools, because we can say all we want, relationships are important, but how do you build relationships? And routines and expectations and procedures need to be taught over and over again. How do you teach it over and over again? You know, what are the different ways you can teach what you expect in your classroom? One of the things that I'm really excited about for our district this year, we spent a lot of time last year just kind of looking at our turnover in just for teachers in our district. And we're a district of We have around 450 teachers, and we're a pre-K to 12 district. And so we had, last school year, we hired around 60 teachers. So knowing we're at 450, that's a good chunk. Going into this school year, we hired about 51. And we wanted to determine how can we better support them. And some of our teachers were brand new teachers. Others were coming from, you know, other districts. They had teaching experience, but we wanted to make sure we were intentional about teaching them about District 87. So to start off the school year prior to when teachers contractually came back, we invited all of our new to District 87 teachers. So whether you have teaching experience or not, the opportunity to do 4 days of onboarding. It was all paid by the district. So we weren't expecting that they volunteered their time, but in an effort to support them, we wanted to teach them about District 87. So the first day focused on their building, and it was almost entirely led by their building principal, designed how they wanted to teach about their building and expectations. The second day was focused on district procedures, policies, so curriculum was a focus of that as well. The third day we focused on community. So we actually arranged for them to be able to go. We took a bus. We went around. Our district is about 10 square miles, but we took them around everywhere, because even if you're teaching at the high school, we want you to know where our elementary and early childhood kids live and what neighborhoods they're coming from, and to see the area that our kids are growing up in. And so we did that, and that was the community day. And then the last day was focused on their classroom, where we had our building mentors and instructional coaches available for them as they were setting up their classroom. So that was something that just out of the way, didn't have to, I mean, it wasn't all going to be done necessarily in one day for some of them, but wanted to give them an opportunity to just connect with some colleagues immediately in the building that would be resources for them. And then to continue that relationship building, our mentor program is a district mentor program. So there are a number of mentors assigned to each building, depending on the number of new staff that they have. And they have monthly meetings as well for mentoring. So that's for us a new strategy that we are trying out this year to see if that will help with some additional supports built in on the front end and then also throughout the year for them.
That's awesome, Leslie. Thanks. One of there's kind of been a couple of questions in the or comments in the chat, but one thing, if I could ask, are you seeing with within the district you're hiring new? So within the last 2 years, over 100 new teachers to your district. I'm sure that that's a theme that's patterned across lots of districts in the region and beyond across the country. Have you gotten a sense as to like stress, burnout, like what's driving them away from the school or what's bringing them to your area? And in addition to what's going on in the at the front of the school year, I know that District 87 is planning some additional wellness and well-being initiatives to persist for self-care throughout the year. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah. So, sorry, your first question going back to what's causing them to leave, is that right? Or causing them to come back? I think it's a mix. You know, we had exit surveys from the HR office that, you know, some people would fill out, some people wouldn't. So we've changed it to be an online form that goes out to every employee that leaves the district. But one thing it didn't ask was, you know, where are you going? And asking for some specific feedback about what didn't go well for you here that we could work on improving. And so I was curious to know, it's still a little bit early on for us in the year that I haven't gotten the feedback yet for those this year. But I was interested to know if people were leaving, are they leaving education altogether or are they going to a different district? You know, and unfortunately, like I said, I don't have those results back yet. And not having been in this role last year, I don't have that information for last year's group specifically. And I don't even know that that was necessarily a question, just from what I happen to know about some of those that left. Some did, some left. You know, our district, they're depending on where they were going. There are some districts where the compensation is different, where there are some that we, it's common, where we'll see some who have gone to ISU and then they stay down here, but ultimately they're drawn to go back to wherever home is. You know, that was for myself, that was something that I said, oh, I'll be here for a year. I'll teach for 1 year and then I'm heading back north. That was absolutely my plan. And I ended up staying, but I know that that's another factor because as you leave that college arena, your social group changes, right? Your friends are leaving also. They're going into other opportunities. So I think that that connection piece with their colleagues is important, especially for our new staff who don't know people in the community or in the area. For them to form some of those friendships amongst their colleagues is important as well.
Thanks. Other questions from the group. So we've had some chat in the Zoom window in regards to partnering with local districts. And have you seen or have you been approached to kind of co-design or co-develop either courses or learning experiences for pre-service teachers? How does 87 feed back their needs to the local universities who are sending students or teachers into your buildings so that the needs are met for when they're new teachers or transitioning from other districts?
Mm-hmm. I can't say that I know of that there's a ton with other districts. We've started doing some more with Unit 5, which is the Bloomington Normal is split really into two public school districts. And so we're Bloomington and then Normal has their own district. And so we've started to do some collaboration with them when it comes to DEI and that communication about, you know, what are we doing to communicate our expectations for diversity and equity and inclusion. As far as, you know, that communication back to universities and colleges, I know, you know, we're fortunate that some of our own staff, whether it's teachers or administrators, have some instructional roles at ISU. So whether it's in the College of Education, the EAF department for administration, either through guest speaking or they have classes in which they are professors for. And I love that because it takes people who are in the seat right now, day to day, and they get to communicate with those who are wanting to be in education and in our classrooms. I know that there are times like in the spring, I'll go and talk to one of the professors that our department has built a relationship with. He always has student teachers, you know, throughout District 87. And we'll go and we'll talk to them and we'll talk about, you know, job fairs and interviewing and that process, accepting your first job. But also I recognize I haven't been in the classroom in several years. So they have a different perspective and a current classroom teacher has a different perspective that they can offer than I can.
Thanks, Leslie, for all that information. One thing that, and I'm not sure how many other states are doing this and if Illinois is doing it or not, but we are having a lot of our student teachers be emergency hired and during their student teaching. And so there's a lack of support, I think, from, you know, a kind of built-in mentor. And it is something where I see some of our students thriving in that environment and mostly some of our post-bac students, but some of our other students who are kind of true undergraduate students that really still need that kind of day-to-day support by a mentor are not getting it because of the emergency hire situation. And I'm just wondering sort of what feedback you would have for PEAT faculty in order to prepare our students better for those situations, because our programs are, you know, situated in a way that we're preparing them for student teaching, knowing that they are still going to have a mentor with them side by side during that experience. And if they don't, I think that changes things drastically. So I'm not sure what districts are doing in that instance, or if you have any, you know, ideas around what we could do better to prepare our students for those potential situations.
So when you say emergency hire, are you like, so immediately after they finish student teaching?
No, like during student teaching, they're hired as a full-time teacher at the school as an emergency hire without licensure.
Okay. And we haven't had that for us at District 87. So we would, I mean, we have some who they're starting with us on a short-term approval through our State Board of Ed, but they're not, they have a degree or they have their teaching degree. It may not be in the content area that now we're hiring them to teach, but to just without having finished that student teaching component, we haven't had that.
I do see that Michael Mesereau has his hand up, but I'm going to get to you in just a moment because we are going to just be mindful of time and transition. So thank you very much, Leslie. And like she said, I know you have to potentially pop out a little bit early. And so if we do have follow-up questions, we'll bring them to you. But you also just talked about, you know, people who are right in the classroom or working directly with K-12 students. And so that's the perfect segue over. And so that I don't get it wrong, I'm going to go to my cheat sheet. But we have Janine Ford and Christy Hobby from Tarpon Springs, Florida. And so Janine actually taught me back in 1996. So I'm aging her, outing her in front of everybody. But they are both associated with the Tarpon Springs Leadership Conservatory for the Arts and the Pageantry Arts Honor Society. And we have Tampa Independent Performing Ensemble. So they both teach dance and color guard. And then Christy is also an elementary teacher. She's been 8 years. And so we're going to hear a little bit from them about their perspectives of what they've seen current students in K-12, kind of what they've seen change, what their students' needs are right now. So I will turn it over to them.
First and foremost, thank you so much for the invite. We feel privileged and honored to be a part of this. So I'll speak on behalf of myself, Janine Ford and
Christy Hobby.
So, and just kind of thinking a little bit about what Leslie had touched on about how when students are graduating from college, they have a great idea of the technology that is helping them in the teaching community, and their students are really great at the technology aspect of succeeding in the classroom. And so great segue for us, because the things that are on our list are more towards the building the student from the inside out. So a few years ago, we were noticing that empathy was lacking, mindset, goal-orientated, just some of those keynotes were missing with our students. So we started working out of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers. That's why part of our initiative at the high school was to get that leadership component. So all of the students that we teach are required to take the leadership class, which again, the main component to that is the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teenagers. One of the things that we have really noticed is the lack of empathy. So being that they're constantly on their phones using social media, that the social interaction between our students was something that we felt we really needed to focus on. So some of the things or some of the initiatives initiatives that we were taking was in our classroom. You walk in, we're meeting them at the door. We've got some great music playing. We're saying hello to each one of the students, immediately asking for eye contact, some sort of emotional response. And then, you know, because it's a dance and color guard class, they go change. Then we sit by the whiteboard. We start them off with a goal. So we typically would have a quote on the board. We would discuss that quote and how they can implement that, not only in the color guard and dance realm, but also in all of their other classrooms for the day. So just kind of, and Christy will touch a little bit upon this as well, but just basically starting out with a goal, and then from there, implementing that goal throughout our classroom. And then, Christy, do you want to talk a little bit about how that goal turns into that small goal into the larger picture?
Yeah. So something I've noticed, and this is kind of, maybe it's the social media, maybe it's just the change in how students are responding, but the goals we make for them, you know, and I also teach third grade, and even in my third grade classroom, the goals work better and the students are more excited when they are more short term and they can see the end result faster. So that's kind of a new thing, you know, and I think as an educator, we have to do a lot of planning behind the scenes that makes the goal long term, especially if what the student is seeing is just the short term. So we do a lot of that on our own, you know, and we definitely at the high school level talk to the students about the long term, but what gets them motivated on a day-to-day basis, class to class, is the short term. Can they see improvement in that class, in that hour, in that 30 minutes, whatever block of time you have? So I think, you know, as an educator, it takes a little more prep and planning to kind of think about the long term yourself, but they definitely buy in when they can see improvement within one class period.
And I think the other thing too is no matter what age, whether it's third or whether it's a senior in high school, celebrating the wins. So we do a lot of that. Today, Christy and I had an experience with one of our students, and she was having a difficult time with the skill. And then just recently ran up to Christy, was so excited over the fact that she's now able to achieve that. So in our classroom, again, just kind of focusing on energy given is energy received. So we all celebrate that success with the student. Just to kind of move on, just because I know we're short on time and we have so many things to talk about. Mental health is also a thing that, and I'm sure you're experiencing that at the college level, probably with some of your peers in your college classrooms. Whether it is just being more pronounced, it's something that 15 years ago, I never thought that I would have to deal with. And coming out of COVID, it hit us very difficult in the classroom. Had numerous students who were Baker acted, just, you know, on a daily basis, we were having to deal with some of those things. And I think it does go back to teaching them how to handle their feelings, how to be a little bit more aware of other people's feelings. You know, they spend so much time, as we spoke about, on their phones, that it's really difficult for them to understand how their words really matter. So again, even 9, 10th, 11th, 12th year olds, 12th graders, they're not able to articulate their feelings. So how can we expect them to understand what somebody else is feeling? And I know that this is kind of a strange thing because we're just teaching a color guard and dance class. But, you know, we hope that through our classroom etiquette and through the things that we're trying to implement with the students, that you're seeing that in your math classes and your science classes. So I don't know if you want to touch on that at all, Christy, or.
Yeah. And I think too, something that we try to do on all the levels is make a safe environment where mistakes and failure are a part of the process, you know, and I often sample okay, I failed or I made a mistake. What is my response going to be? Because I think, you know, students now, they're not as used to failure and mistakes on their own. So they don't, when it happens, and we all know it's going to happen, you know, there's going to be that progressive struggle before they get to the end. But when it does happen, they don't know how to react to it. So you kind of have to sample for them, okay, I did this. What's my next step? What's my emotional response? What's my intellectual response? How am I taking this and turning it into a positive? So we do that on like a daily basis as well. Just here's how I act, you know, and here's what to do. And it's okay. It's a part of the process of what we do. And one more little thing, because Leslie kind of mentioned this and it reminded me, she talked about how when she graduated, went into the classroom management piece was like the biggest struggle, right? And I felt that same thing. And it's a learning process. As kids change, your management does change. The core of what you do and who you are doesn't, but your management and your day-to-day do for sure. So one thing that I kind of have picked up on is less is more with management. I think when I first started teaching, I tried every online tool in the book, like every big picture thing, the tallies on the board, everything you could think of, I was trying. And the last couple of years, my biggest realization has been engagement is the best management. Because if they are engaged in what they're doing, if they have choice and autonomy in the classroom, the management will also be better. So when you're thinking about your classroom management, focus on the engagement, what you're asking the kids to do. Are their voices heard? Are they choosing their activities? And your management will also be better.
I think the one last thing, if we have time, is that okay? Okay. So the one last thing that I was not a fan of when I first started teaching was the social media aspect of things. And because they do, they find their self-worth through the amount of hearts and likes and all of those things on social media. So how to use that or utilize that in a positive light. We do a lot of things now on social media. We show little blurbs of, you know, students achieving things at a high level. They love that. It actually makes them kind of, you know, the very next day want to do something even more. We're a skill-based mindset, you know, so here, some of the skills that they're able to do, they're trying to, you know, one up it the very next day. So just using social media to give them a positive outlook on themselves, but also trying to get them to understand that, you know, the social, what would you say, like, that they don't need that, the hearts and the likes and all of that, that, you know, that just being the better person, sometimes will win, if that makes sense. So we have more if we want to continue, again, just being aware of time, or if anybody has any questions, or, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we've made so many changes based off of each year, the classroom, the students, they're going to be different. And how we teach one student versus the other, it cannot be the same. You know, I know for my daughter being in a math class, you know, that she is a different learner. She excels in so many aspects of education, but that was the one thing. And trying to teach her the exact same way that, you know, somebody would teach Christy, you just really need to, you have to get to know your students, know what motivates them, know what doesn't motivate them. You know, and just being able to plan your day and your curriculum off of the students that you're teaching today, not who you taught last semester or what may happen in the future.
Awesome. These are amazing insights. Folks, if you have questions, go ahead and raise your hand for these two educators. I think what they're sharing really relates and resonates with this notion of students lacking empathy and having to modify and alter what it is that we do in our classrooms to really meet students where they are. And there's so much going on in and around kids that they don't have autonomy, they don't have choice and voice. And so it sounds like you create a safe environment for them to have voice and choice and really honoring who they are and where they are. So thank you for sharing that. We really appreciate it. Well, as questions come to mind for our two educators, we'll include those in the chat. If you're open and welcome questions via email, go ahead and put your email, Jeanne, and Christy for others to be able to ask questions or maybe connect out with you individually. But we'll transition to our third panelist. Julene is a faculty member at Truman State University. And I think her work will, for some of you, you've maybe seen some parts of the longitudinal study that Julene and the team that she works with has done over quite a few years, that will highlight some of these push and pull factors as to why people have stayed in the field and persisted in careers, and perhaps what has pushed them out and transitioned into other roles within education or beyond. So Jeline, I'll turn it over to you. We're excited to hear the work that you are doing and continue to do with PE professionals.
Hi, everyone. I'm maybe newbie to PE, TE collaborative, because usually I'm teaching an outdoor rec class at this time. So it's not a hardship because I'm usually in a canoe or fishing or doing something like that. Today we had an in-class day. It's been pretty cold in Missouri the last couple of days. So today we just talked about Leave No Trace. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about why teachers stay. I kind of wanted to focus on the positive because I think we have a good idea of why teachers are leaving. And it's kind of already been talked about through some of our other panelists, but I've got a longitudinal study. I need to do some writing and publish some of these results. Amy Woods and Pam Kalina are collaborators on this project. And really this stemmed from my doctoral research at the University of Illinois. I had an interest. Amy had done some longitudinal research on physical educators, published quite a bit of those. You guys can check those out. But I was like, hey, that's kind of a cool idea. Not really understanding what I was getting myself into with qualitative research and things like that. But the teachers that I started following are now in their 10th year of teaching. And I started with a group of 15. We are now down to 6. And so I feel like I've got a pretty good pulse on what's happening kind of across the levels and things like that. So I wanted to kind of focus on the positive side. So when I ask them specifically, they get the same like set of questions. I interview them twice a year at the beginning of the school year and the end of the school year. They set some goals for themselves, kind of talk about what their environment's like. And then there's some common questions. Some of the things, the threads that have come up when I've asked them, like, why do you, you know, it's hard. Like they'll describe all the hard things that they go through. And I'll say, why do you continue to do this? And usually the first thing they'll say is because I don't know what else I would do. Like I am wired to want to be in a classroom. I'm wired to want to be physically active. Like this is what I've always wanted to do. I don't know what else I would do if I didn't do this. So I don't know if that's the best reason to stay in the field, but a lot of, I think, our students who are going through PETE, they kind of feel like, I'm not sure what else I would do. Like, I just like sports. I like being athletic. I like being, you know, moving. I couldn't sit behind a desk. And so maybe they sort of default into our laps to start with, but then it's our job to train them, you know, in the skills that they need. So that's usually the first thing. They enjoy teaching, even when it's hard. They have a genuine care for students, compassion for students. In the 10 years that I've been following them, we've had a lot of really hard stuff that's happened. Cases where teachers have had to call child protective services. Cases where students have had like some physical harm. you know, in developing these relationships with students over time, students a lot of times will treat a teacher as a confidant and say things that then, you know, our mandated reporter kind of pulling forward. And that's just emotionally, it's really hard. I tell my students all the time, I think the easiest part of teaching is the actual teaching. It's all of the other stuff that comes with the prep and sort of the emotional issues that go with it, I think that are much harder. So one of the questions that I've asked my my research partners over and over and over, twice a year, every year, are you an agent of change? Why or why not? And they'll, I have a couple of them. They're like, I hate this question. I hate that I don't ever feel like I'm doing all of the right things, but they'll always get to the point where they say yes. Yes, I guess so. Or yes, I hope so. And I'll say, well, why? Why do you think you're an agent of change? And then they'll start listing off all the things. And then they'll say, oh, I guess it really is like important that I'm doing what I'm doing. It kind of helps them start to realize those kinds of things. So, you know, I think that that's really the biggest thing. I was kind of talking through this with Shannon before I accepted her offer to do this. And I said, really, I think what I'm learning over time is that the teachers who stay in the field, they have a different gear when it comes to like resiliency, being able to deal with change and things like that. And the other common denominator is that they feel like they are making a difference. Even if it's a small difference, people recognize that what they're doing matters. And, you know, they feel valued for what they do. Maybe not all the time, but they have a high self-efficacy toward their content skills, toward their pedagogical skills, and others around them have been supportive and recognize that. The teachers in my study who've dropped out, it's, as you can imagine, it's the exact opposite, right? They don't feel valued. They don't feel supported by colleagues or admin. Admin is not giving them the resources that they need. Admin's not scheduling things in a conducive way for classes. Admins doesn't have their back when it comes to student behavior issues. They tend to side with students and parents rather than the teacher. Like, these are the common threads that I hear coming up from the people who leave as opposed to the people who stay. And not to say that there's not crossover, you know, the teachers who've stayed, they've all been through everything that I just described. The people leaving have had issues with, but somehow they found a way, another gear to be able to bounce back, that resiliency. And as I was sitting here today, I was kind of going through in my head, you know, the six teachers who are still in the study, they've all been at multiple levels. So if we think like elementary, middle school, high school, two levels, three schools, two schools, one has had six different administrators in 9 years. That's significantly hard. Three schools, three levels, four schools, two levels, three schools, three levels, two schools, two levels. These are people who embrace change and somehow they don't let themselves get to the point where they're so beat down that they can't pull themselves back up. I do think that there is a something to be said. These six have remained connected in some way to their PETE programs. I think that that offers some support. It may help that they've stayed connected to me because they know they can check in, they can vent, and often they will. Like, they'll text me and be like, oh my gosh, I just have to tell you I had the worst day, or, you know, whatever. So they're finding support. They've kind of built their own support structures around them. And I think that that's been important for them to feel like they're getting what they need. Now, just to kind of turn a gear or to a page on this, I have asked, as I've been collecting data, what kinds of things would you suggest for PETE programs? Like, what, knowing what you know now, you know, in almost 10 years of teaching, what do you think would have been like better for you coming out? And here's the things that they listed: more authentic experiences, which, if you're like me and you teach in PETE, I'm like, I don't know how much more of that I can do. Like, I feel like I'm maxing out on getting my students the best I can do for the time that we have and the resources that we have. But that's the first thing. Second thing they say is more realistic expectations. A lot of times the common thread has been that they feel like they have been sort of like PE is the best, you should do PE, whatever, like it's going to be great, you're going to love your job, but being more realistic about that there's going to be bad days, that things aren't going to be always, you know, like the best day ever. In coursework experiences, they suggest some kind of content related to how to handle admin issues, like what to do when you can't get along with your principal or your principal wants you to do something that isn't the thing that you know you should be doing, or you don't feel like your admin has your back, you're having a student issue, those kinds of things. Some kind of content on how to deal with difficult colleagues. So just we're back to like interpersonal skills and communication issues, conflict resolution, like basic stuff that's not necessarily PET driven, but it plays a role. I mean, we're in a people serving, people helping, you know, profession. And we all are going to be, well, not we in PETE, I guess sometimes maybe, but like they're going to go out and they're going to be working with people who don't want to do best practices. I'm teaching my students how to teach best practices PE, standards-based curriculum, those kinds of things. And they're going to be working with people who could care less. And so how do you deal with that as a new person? How to handle difficult student issues and student behaviors. A lot of what we're running into with, or at least here at Truman, I feel like with my students who are out doing internship student teaching, is some of the hard behavior things. And it's what was already described about, you know, what we know to be true about students now is just different. And so I think in PET, we just need to have a good pulse on, you know, making sure that our students understand how to deal with differing populations and different things and what their resources would be for those. Accommodating differences is always one of those things that pops up. Students, you know, that creates anxiety in students when they have to work on accommodating differences. They would like some sort of content on work-life balance. How do you figure out how to say no? Because when you're young and you're starting off in your first job, a lot of times you're not making a lot of money. So they're the first people who coach two or three different things, and they're trying to figure out how to make life work because they need to make money, but maybe, you know, like it's too much to expect a beginning teacher to be successful. And then Kevin could tell you 10,000 things about the role conflict with teaching and coaching and how that plays into like our work-life balance and things like that. So professional development connections, I hear over and over. I ask them what they're doing to improve their teaching twice a year. And they'll say, well, my district makes me do professional development, but it never pertains to physical education. I had one of my teachers say that she asked specifically to her admin, can we please just have a PE professional development? Her admin was like, oh, that would be a great idea. And so the next professional development, she just basically, what it was, they walked in, she had a screen, the admin had a screen set up, and she put on a video from PE Central. And that was the PE professional development. And so, you know, you can talk about SEL and things like that. And I think it sort of covers, you know, like every subject in school and whatever. But if they're not connected back to some good professional, like here we have MoShape, Iaford in Illinois, things like that, going to Shape America, not always a reasonable thing for somebody who's teaching. In a K-12 environment, getting time off. I've had issues with my grads getting time off from their schools because there's such a shortage of teachers and such a shortage of subs that they're not even, they'll tell their admins will say, you can't use personal days for going to a conference. And then they text me and they're like, Dr. Ensign, I can't use my personal. I'm like, yes, you absolutely can use your personal. Like they can't tell you that, but just the pushback. So, and then the last thing I'm going to talk about is just mentors. It really depends. Like a lot of the experience comes from being paired with a good mentor. And if your district doesn't pair your PETE students with a good mentor, like those grads with a good mentor, I think as PETE faculty, we have a responsibility to at least invite them to stay connected to us, but also to help them get connected into the PETE, like this broader world, where they can get some, you know, sort of iron sharpens iron type philosophy. Like Let's learn from people who are going to make us better. So those were the big things I just wanted to share. I don't know if anybody has any questions related to that.
Well, I love it. And you do have the chat like burning up right now. You're the hot topic, but I'm going to recognize Hans first because he did raise his hand.
Well, he's working on his audio. Do you want to jump in, Shannon, with some of the things in the chat?
Sure. So, you know, people were definitely, I know that there's like the burning socialization topic, and, you know, making sure that we're preparing students for that. And so that was great that you brought that up. You know, getting them ready for, you know, what your peers are going to challenge you with, or if your administration doesn't, you know, align with your goals and what you have been taught is best practices or are best practices. Let's see, any Hans, any? Yes.
Sorry, I still had my Zoom thing on AirPod Pro and stuff. So my tech savviness shows again. So again, thanks to the panelists for sharing their insights and expertise. My sense is that the PEAT community has fallen victim to trying to do everything in a span of about 4 semesters. Mm-hmm. It's become a pressure cooker that simply cannot take any more. And I would offer a suggestion that as a community, and I think this is not intended as a recruitment trip for people to come on to the PEAT Standards Task Force that's going to come up here in the next couple of years. But what are the core responsibilities for a PEAT program? We simply do not have the time or the resources and expertise to address all the issues the myriad of issues that have come up in the discussion just today. And we can probably point to many other topics and issues in other conversations. Work-life balance, of course, that's something that is important to everyone, but we simply do not have the time to get involved in every single possible little shiny object that gets shown before us. And so the first speaker, I don't see her on the screen all of a sudden anymore. Is she still there?
I think she had to pop out, but it was lovely.
Okay. Anyway, she talked about, you know, the difficulties with class management. And I was non-compliant. I was doing a private chat with Professor Kern at Wyoming. And we were chatting about, okay, everything we know about setting up good class management, we've known that since the 80s in physical education, teacher education. Those are the technical skills that can be developed through some concentrated practice. But because we get distracted, we don't get to the point where our majors from micro peer teaching contexts all the way through student teaching, or what's now referred to as student residencies, where they can practice those skills. And is it any wonder that they then go into the school and tend to fall through the cracks because they lack the technical skills of managing behavior effectively? And I'm not talking about, you know, being a drill sergeant or an authoritarian type of a person that's going to tell kids to shut up and stand on the line. It's how do you get classes to be engaged, as was mentioned as well. Kids who are engaged don't have time to screw around. And yes, SEL is important, but that's not the core set of issues that we have to deal with. We only have 4 semesters, people. And so we need to use that time wisely. So less is more would be my suggestion to focus on. I mean, I know Kevin is probably going to kill me next time he sees me, but I don't know. Do we need a socialization standard in the PEAT standards? Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. We can't do it all. But anyway, I'm not saying your work's not important, Kevin, but Is it core? Micropolitics? Yes, of course, it's important. And that's where those professional development sessions, once the new teachers are in the schools, that what Jolene was talking about, if that can be physical education specific, where you can address the issues specific to our subject, that's when it can be addressed. How do you navigate the campus? Of course, we are our own worst enemies. We tend to hide in our PE offices, right? And we tend to ignore everything that goes on campus. I'll shut up and turn off my sound.
Well, thank you for having your sound on and letting us hear from you. But that is a lot of kind of what started this whole discussion of why we wanted to bring in the people we brought in today, is so that instead of saying we need to have a separate space where we talk about social emotional learning, a special class where we talk about perceived mattering, it's really within everything. And so and of course I'm partial, right? I told you Janine taught me 30 years ago, but just that bringing it all into how they're teaching and doing the role modeling and, you know, even pointing out as far as work-life balance, like, let your students know, like, actually, no, I'm not available for a meeting at 5:30 because, like, I have to have that boundary and I have to have time where I have personal things happening. You brought up also, Hans, you know, the engagement piece and I can't remember names, but Janine and Christy really talked about that engagement is management. And that kind of connected me back to Leslie's idea that, you know, if we could really remind our students to look at the community, and I'm sure we all do this in our classes, but when we talk about, and Webster had it in the comments, that our content relevance, you know, if we can connect to the community, we can make our content more relevant. And so just reminding our undergrads or our graduate students, reminding them, you know, get to know the community, go out there and do things where you can now make them relate to what we're trying to teach them. And then I already said the perceived mattering and the socialization, and Jolene was talking about agents of change. Like, you know, if we can get our students, you know, to have, and this ties back into with what Christy was saying with doing the goal setting and thinking about the long term, but when they're reflecting, because I know we all teach them how to reflect on their course or on their lesson plans, but like, how did you make change today? You know, how are we benefiting? Because it seems like positivity kind of went through everybody's discussions today. And so how can we make sure that we remind our students to reflect on what is the positive that we're doing? And then maybe that can help, you know, underlie some of the turnover and give them a little bit more of that resilience when they remember to focus on what the good things are that are happening. And so I see a lot of comments in here, but that was kind of my overview reflection of what the three or four presenters had to say. And again, the reason we wanted to bring that to everybody and kind of start the discussion is, you know, we need to be prepared for the incoming freshmen. And so understanding what's happening at the high school level. So are all the high school teachers actually teaching them how to reflect and how to goal set and how to be mindful and aware of themselves? And so if they're coming to us and they don't have any empathy, they don't know how to, you know, they're only looking for likes and hearts, then we don't need a separate class, but we need to be ready for the students who are coming to us. And for our seniors who are getting ready to student teach, they need to be ready for that because that's what their students are going to be faced with in the next semester. And so I'll hand it to Emily.
Rhonda, you've got a hand up. Would you share?
Hi, Emily. Thank you so much. Well, first of all, I'm so glad that I was set in on this session today because I've been taking notes like mad, and I'm very delighted that it's taped as well. I want to just give a great thanks to all three presenters. I also want to encourage Jolene to certainly do that research because the amount of longitudinal studies that we have in PE is so thin compared to our classroom teachers, you know. So I do encourage you to publish that, and then you'll have good people like Hans and the rest of us reading and sharing those results, because what you said today was very powerful. And so thank you all. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Rhonda, for that. We are super appreciative to the panelists bringing perspectives to the Peak Collaborative that haven't yet been represented or reflected in a way that that it can be. And so we welcome everyone, or we thank folks that joined as well and offered input and continued the conversation in the chat or by engaging with our panelists. We do have an opportunity, if you didn't join us for our last Peak Collaborative, Jamie's going to make a re-announcement of what our vision for the Peak Collaborative is moving forward and into the spring. So hold on tight, and also an announcement about our next Peak Collaborative, when and where and how to join us.
Yeah, so thanks so much, Emily, and all of the panelists today in the organizing group. One of the pieces of feedback that we have received in the past is to have stakeholders outside of ourselves on the calls. And so I think it's always great when we get the opportunity to hear from people that aren't necessarily, that are connected to us, but aren't necessarily doing the exact same thing. And so thank you so much for our guests for being here and sharing that insight. To reiterate Emily's thanks. As Emily mentioned, we are here pretty much every Thursday, every first Thursday of the month. We will take a break over the holidays, but we will have a session. December 7th is our next session. You can always use the same Zoom link that you used to get in today. And we do love when you get the announcement to send it out to other folks and graduate students and other people that you think might be interested in the topic. And so just kind of keeping that in mind, we hope to see more people joining us each week and setting aside this time. The other thing that Emily mentioned, and we talked about it a little bit last time, and there was some issues with the link, but I've just popped into the chat a Google form that is open for people to submit proposal ideas for the spring for the Peak Collaborative. So in the past, we have used feedback from the community to shape the topics that we are discussing and sometimes responding to current events and things like that. But we would love for this to be even more collaborative in nature and have people bring ideas to us just to kind of make sure that everyone's on the same page. These aren't necessarily conference presentations where you're coming in and showing slides and telling us about your research. But discussions like the one that we had today that can be, obviously grounded in or based in research, but that are open kind of for everybody to contribute in a collaborative manner, as the title of the meeting suggests. So the link is in there. Save it, bookmark it, get together with some friends. We encourage panels that have various types of various different stakeholders and really a consideration for diversity and things as well. So just keep that in mind if it's something that you're interested in. So again, thank you so much for joining us on this week's Peak Collaborative. We are going to stop the recording now, but folks are welcome to stick around for a while and engage in some informal conversation with our panelists or each other about the topic or other things. So thanks again so much, and we'll see you in December.